Hello, we are Terra Nova, a horror podcast hosted by Kendall and Jackie, and here we talk about everything horror. And this podcast is specifically for you, the horror fans, and the non-horror fans. If you're too scared to watch the movies, it's fine. We talk about it, we discuss it, we dissect it, we laugh about it, talk about the good, the bad, and the tropes. And we have new episodes released Tuesdays bi-weekly.
And follow us on Facebook and Instagram at TerraNova_podcast. But also feel free to reach out through email at terranova.pod@gmail.com. And most importantly, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend.
And tell your dog too. Cujo.
Hello.
Hey, Jackie, what's going on?
Alive.
That is good. Every time you say it, that means we get to do another episode, and that means you're still with us, so I'll take it.
I know, Kendall was just like, I'm not doing this with myself next time. If you're done, I'm done too. And I'm like, okay. Okay.
And hey, you gotta remember, man, that half the fun of this is doing it with you. So, you know, people be like, and if I do an episode of you aren't here, people be like, what happened to Jackie? And when you do an episode and I'm not there, they like, what happened to Kendall? So, you know, you can't win without losing.
I know. They're like, what happened to him? I'm like, I ate him. So I tell my kids all the time. So I ate him. I'll eat you too. Like, that's why I stay young.
Like the creature from Species, like that.
I tell my kids that I'm being serious. I tell them that they don't believe that I'm so young, and they're like, "Are you a vampire?" I'm like, "Yes, I'm a vampire." One of them actually believes me. He told his dad that, and now he doesn't ever want to let go of the fact that I told him I'm a vampire. So now I'm a vampire for the rest of my life. Now, no regrets. But
yeah, I totally see that.
But yeah, so this is not a Terra Nova typical episode. The new year, and now we're starting off the new year with a new Terra Talk, our favorite things, where we get to interview people we've had on the podcast, and you know, give an insight into their lives, who they are, what they like, you know, like, you know, how they like me more, you know, just saying. But today we have a special guest. You know, she has been on our podcast, you know, numerous times. We like talking to her on a daily, even when we're not, you know, recording, just checking, you know, everything out. And she's been like a really amazing person. She is a creative person. She makes things, she bakes things, she likes horror. She helps me sometimes when we're doing Indigenous Month. I'm just like, I need help. And she is an educator, and that is our good friend Marissa.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good, good, good. Happy to be back. Hope everyone is well. It is pouring over here in lovely Los Angeles.
Oh, it was snowing here earlier.
Yeah, we got some flurries.
That sounds prettier.
In New York, it's never pretty. In New York, snow is not pretty. It's either gray or yellow. It's never pretty. It's never pretty.
Oh.
I love her. I love her response. Like, oh.
No, just gross. Yellow snow.
Yeah, I feel like most of New York is yellow snow as a whole. It's a dirty ass city sometimes, as much as I like it here.
For real. But yes, yeah, so how have you been?
It's been good. I am now teaching in the winter quarter. I teach at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and the College of Creative Studies in their art department. But last quarter, I wrapped up a seminar on horror and art. So that was a lot of fun. But this quarter, I'm doing a textile course.
Now, for those who may not know, when we needed help for Indigenous Month, we were just like, oh my God, who do we talk to about this? How do we fill out our month for Indigenous Month? And I immediately thought of Marissa because you were also studying Indigenous horror and also lecturing about that as well.
Yeah. Like, so like that was like a focus in my thesis program, was focusing on Indigenous horror in art and in media. And that ended up just being like my specialty focus. And that's something that I've been blessed that I can now teach. But yeah, always happy to help with recommendations when I can.
Yeah. We appreciate it a ton. It's, as you know, we spoke about it before, it is kind of hard sometimes to find Indigenous film, you know, it's, you know, prior to, like, I feel like maybe up until 3, maybe 5 years ago, it just seemed to be hard to find anything that's quote unquote outside of the mainstream, especially if it's created by, you know, a culture or people who generally weren't originally celebrated very heavily. It's always hard to find this shit. You know, there wasn't any black horror movies for Jordan Peele, so I understand.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that there are, like, you know, small examples. Like, there's definitely some independent films, and there's a lot of artists who depict horror in their work. But yeah, mm-hmm. it's been far and in between. I mean, we definitely have, like, ill representations in a lot of, like, famous horror films. Yeah. And, like, that's often how you end up seeing yourself. But I feel like, you know, as you said, like, more contemporarily, like, there's been this beautiful, like, renaissance of, like, you know, being represented on so many different nuances and so many different levels. So that's exciting, where it's like, oh, like, you know, you're not a medicine man, or, like, you're not rendered to, like, an idea of just being, like, a myth, and, like, you know, your people yeah. don't exist anymore, which is, like, that's, like, a fucking lie. and yeah, so it's exciting, like, the horror films that have been coming out more recently. But I mean, even though I poo-poo on, like, a lot of horror films of the past or, like, ill representation, like, that still is what brought me into horror, and I can't ignore it.
Well, speaking about horror, what was it that really made you fall in love with it? Like, movie, books, anything? Like, what was it made you go, like, this is what I want to stay with?
I mean, I think definitely the pandemic really brought back my love for horror cinema and, like, focusing on horror, like, in my graduate program. But I think, like, what really, like, solidified, like, oh, horror is, like, my favorite genre of film, like, of all time, was definitely when I was in high school. mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, I was an awkward goth kid, and I just, like, fell in love.
That was you?
Yeah, that was me, and that still is me. yeah, I mean, I do love pastels now, but I remember saving up all my money to buy myself, like, a portable DVD player when those were a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when I finally was able to do that, like, you know, my dad had, like, a Blockbuster membership, and, like, my mom would take me to Blockbusters, and, you know, I would go there all the time. Because I was such an introvert, like, I'm on the spectrum. It was so hard for me to, like, talk to people and, like, make friends and, like, you know, just be social. So films were my escape. And the horror film section was always the one that was always filled constantly, whether it be, like, you know, films from, like, the 80s or, like, the 90s or, like, new horror films. I always felt like there was always something new for me to watch there. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love with it. And, you know, and then when I started buying my own DVDs, I was like, all the DVDs I own are horror. and it just, yeah, it just became, like, that really solidified for me, because it brought me this comfort. And, you know, I loved, like, being able to, like, make art and, like, you know, work on my homework and, like, watch, like, somebody get murdered or haunted in the background.
Yeah.
You know, and I invested in those stories, and they made sense to me. And I really just fell in love with horror, I probably would say, when I was, like, 13, 14, really solidified it.
Well, what were some of your I'm just asking this honestly for my own mindset, but, like, what were some of your favorites?
Oh, when you
first got into the genre?
Hellraiser, for sure. That is, like, we've talked about Hellraiser. Like, I am
diehard
Hellraiser fan. Suspiria was, like, really exciting for me when I saw it as a teenager, and, like, that's still, like, one of my mm-hmm. favorite films of all time. The Hostel series, I really liked it.
Oh, you like that series?
I really liked it. I really like the fact that, you know, it's so mundane. Two dumb Americans going to Europe, and then all this, like, messed up shit happens to them. Like, it just, I don't know, like, that way of storytelling, that just, there's so many twists and turns, and, like, there's people that you think you can trust, and it's like, no, you can't trust them. And yeah, I think it just also kind of displays, like, how naive we are, like, as Westerners. Yeah. So I really enjoyed that series. So that, for sure. Candyman, I really loved in high school. It was, like, one of my top ones that I would always watch all the time with Tim mm-hmm. Curry. Like, that mm-hmm. was a big one for me. You know, all the quintessential horror movies, Exorcist, like, you know, Halloween, all those. Like, I just rewatch them over and over and over again. And also, like, you know, black and white horror films too, you know, like House on Haunted Hill, like, you know, Black Cat, you know, Cat People. Oh my God, I love Cat People. You know, there's, it was just really exciting, you know? And it felt like when you would get a DVD, it's not kind of like Netflix where you can just kind of scroll now. Like, you didn't know what you were getting yourself into. You couldn't just watch a trailer for it. Like, you would have to commit and pay that rental fee. And you either liked it or you didn't. Yep. So
that is true.
Yeah, that was good. That was a good time. It was a good time. How do you feel about some of the gore stuff? I'm just like, I'm always curious how people feel about gore and horror. But like, are you a fan of it? Clearly, you like Hellraiser, so I feel like that's a yes.
Like, body horror is like so gross to me. And like, whenever I think of like body horror, I think of like Cronenberg and like stickiness and like just weird organ meat, and it's just gross. And I think it can work for some movies, and for other movies, I'm just like, oh, that just was too much. You know, like, there are some movies where I'm like, you know, that's an acceptable amount of blood. And then other movies, I'm like, that just was too much. But yeah, I think it just depends. It depends on like the way things are shot, like what the mood is. If there's like more humor involved, like, I'm not as bothered by it. But like, if I'm like invested in like this sort of character development and like the narrative, like, whenever I see like just someone like breaking their leg, I'm like, oh God, no. Like, I react like anybody else. So
that's cool. I still remember making Kendall and Kai watch The Fly for the podcast. And they still haven't forgiven me on how gross that was. The Fly is still one of the greatest body horror films. I'm sorry. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. It is. Brendel Fly.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Like, I enjoyed it a ton. I just wanted to actually, I had to ask you about the horror, like the gore side of horror, because I know we have on so many guests that are women, and it's always interesting to me when we have, like, you know, have guests on, and they're just like, more blood, more body parts. And I was just like, people would have never guessed that if you asked a woman about horror. So it's always funny.
Well, there's also like this misconception that women don't like horror, and women are a large audience of horror. So I'm not bothered by gore. I just want it to be done well. Like, you know, if it's meant to be gory and hilarious, like, yeah, more blood, more guts, like, that's great. Like, let's get freaking weird with it. But if it's just like for shock value, I'm just kind of like, that was unnecessary.
Fair enough.
Yeah, like, you definitely went over budget.
No, I definitely agree with you with that. Like, and you can always tell. You can always tell. And it's just like, what's the story? What's the plot? Is there's no story? Then the hell are we doing? What? It's just cuz?
But also, like, I also love movies where you don't see any of that at all. Like, you just, and you don't even see the monster. It's all like these mind games and you're being messed with. I think those are really successful as well. So, and sometimes those are even creepier. Like, it's not necessarily, you know, seeing all the viscera. It's the absence of.
Yeah. Seeing something in the shadow, seeing like a piece of something. Yeah.
Yeah. Or just like, oh, what was that one Roman Polanski movie with like the tooth? This guy just finds like a tooth in the wall. And the fact that there's a tooth, like, that is just disconcerting, you know, like, like little things like that. Like Blue Velvet, finding an ear in a field, you know, like, that's just gross. like, what do you do with that? Like, and that's creepier to me sometimes than somebody getting their arm chopped off.
All right. So the next question, you did speak about briefly, like, how that was the interest of you with Indigenous horror and to educate them and whatnot. But what was the real, like, root of it to inspire you and say, hey, there's not enough of this. I need to talk about it. I need to educate it. I need to spread it around the world.
Well, I think it was probably like my first year of graduate school, and it was all remote, and I was in a film theory course, and I was like, you know, how come like we always talk down about like horror films, and then like, you know, like rewatching a lot of classics that were mentioned in a lot of theorists' work, I was kind of like, you know, I love these films too, but where am I in this? Like, where are the people that I know in this? Like, where are like the much more rooted stories in this? And I was getting really bored with like seeing the same narrative of like, oh, like, you know, the people that were once here before like curse the land. And it's kind of like, you know, that's kind of like a lazy plot device.
Yeah, super lazy.
It's just something that's also become a joke. And when you really think about like a lot of like colonized places, like it isn't a joke. Like losing your land sucks. You know, being told to assimilate is traumatic. And, you know, humor is a great way to have, you know, medicine to deal with these sort of things. But like also like what is really helpful too is like, you know, boosting narratives that don't want to like, you know, give this any more time. Like, you know, that they want to either, you know, people want to be seen as who they are and they want their own narratives told and correctly so. Yep. And, you know, maybe when we really think about some of these horror films, it's not necessarily, you know, this idea of like a curse, it's an idea of accountability. And that was just something that I saw lacking in a lot of these narratives where it's like, how come we aren't having these tough conversations about assimilation, about colonization, about, you know, memory, collective memory within this country. So yeah, like I wanted to write more academically about it. I wanted to investigate it and I wanted to find works that were, you know, steering this conversation into that direction or having their entire own conversation. You know, what does indigenous horror look like? And what is it? How is it led? You know, is it led through a lot of these tropes that horror has given us or is it creating its own path?
That's a really good point. Actually, what you're saying, that kind of sparked a thought in my mind. Because, you know, as you see with indigenous, like whenever they're kind of included in movies, oftentimes is, you know, that dumb trope, the land, this and the third. Have you ever seen any good examples of a movie where it was like, that was like true in some way, like the land was the reason why the people are cursed, but it wasn't just like simply because the land existed. It's more so like, it's an intentional revenge, like not some bullshit that's like, oh, the culture is foreign to us, that's why it's evil. Like they tend to do it, you know, even voodoo and hoodoo and all that. But like a movie where it was like intentional, where like the people were like, you know what, this actually is cursed, and we made it so because of the bad ills that were passed on to us. Like, you ever seen any films like that where it was actually like kind of well done and nuanced like that?
I feel like you see that a lot in Asian horror.
Like same. I can't think of any examples for indigenous, but I feel the same way. I've seen in Asian horror.
I think, you know, what I see in contemporary indigenous horror is like I see a lot of reckoning with the discomfort of what has happened and an acknowledgement of like, you know, sometimes we just don't know. And it's better off to not poke our nose where it doesn't belong.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, people within a community understanding that this is just the way things are and we live with it. Like you see a lot of that, like in like collective grief, like there's this really amazing Haida indigenous horror film, Edge of the Knife. Where it's like, you know, the community collectively understands that like, oh, like this is what creates a monster. And like, we understand that this is like, this has to happen, but they will be pulled out of it. Yeah. Like, you know, the community understands like what the punishment is when you create trauma and tragedy for a community. So I would say like, that's like probably a good example, but you know, I also feel like there's this push in indigenous horror to not focus on a lot of the damage that's been created by colonialism and instead focus on their own narratives when it comes to storytelling, their own folklore, which is really fucking exciting to me.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen that in like CW's Trickster, where it talked about the folklore of like the changeling, what's the actual word of it?
Not the changeling, it's like a shapeshifter.
Yes. And the same thing with a Netflix series. What was that series called on Netflix, Kendall, that we did on the podcast?
Chambers?
Chambers, yeah. So good. So good and exciting. And it's true because, like, even for us, for, like, Spanish people, where some don't like to admit it, but for some who are accepting our history, our own personal folklore that does date back to our indigenous ancestors, it is exciting to see that in film, to see that stories be told of that, you know. And it's very like, it is not overly frightening, and I feel that's also the whole misconception when it comes to like indigenous films and horror of like, oh, this is scary. A lot of the thing they talk about in folklore is not really meant to be scary. It's meant to teach a lesson.
Yes.
Of like, if you don't do this, this is what's gonna happen. If you don't do that, that's what's gonna happen. Everything has a consequence. Everything, no matter what you do, no matter like the way you bathe, the way you cook, the way you treat people, the way you treat the land, all this stuff has a consequence of something of like, oh, if you don't listen to this, this is gonna happen or that's gonna happen.
And it's just not you paying for it. It's also your community.
Yes. And I think it's so interesting when we do finally see that in storytelling. And, you know, others may see like, well, that wasn't really scary because, you know, it wasn't this, it wasn't that. Because, you know, Kendall and I are always talking about the misconception when it comes to horror. Horror is not just blood, guts, and gore. Mm-mm. Horror is psychological. Horror is emotional. Horror is generational trauma. Horror is environmental trauma. Horror is literally like going down the street alone. That's horror. Everything is horror. It might not be like typical jump scares or boo in your face. It's something more of like an emotional thing where you're just like, that really fucked me up just now. Because I understand that. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
I love, you know, when we did do that. And of course, again, you helped us with that whole month. We did Indigenous Month. It was just such like a, it was so exciting for us to look at that and be like, oh my God, this was so good. This was so well written. This was so well done. I want to see more of this because it is exciting. It's very exciting.
Yeah. And it's just different. I love seeing different stuff. So
it's also like there's
some things.
Yeah. There's a good sense of humor in it too. Like there's always there. Mm-hmm. You can't always be fearful. You have to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's very true. That's
so true. And I love both sides of them stories. I like to see people, you know, just existing in their culture. And I like to see people get revenge. That's why I was curious.
Yeah,
that's why I asked you that question, because it's nice to see both.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Like, you know, I do love a good revenge fantasy, but also I love just seeing people living either like you know a pre-colonial existence where it's like, oh, how lovely. But also yeah, like
that's why Prey was so nice.
Yeah, but also like, you know, like the realities of like living in like a mundane post-colonial existence where it's like, oh, you have like an everyday job and like you have to contribute to the society, but you're also having to like deal with like the paranormal, like, you know, it's both enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Going back to the whole representation, you know, you being a woman of color, and, you know, you're also in the education field when it comes to, like, you know, talking about horror. And, you know, we talked about it briefly about how we are seeing a little bit of a shift being done where representation is being seen, but I guess not in the speed we have hoped. So how do you feel like, what do you think more should be done? How soon do you feel like that's going to happen where we're going to finally be seen in all cultures, finally being seen in film and horror, and not just as the background character, not as the sidekick, not as the trope of like, oh, the one that dies at the end? Like, how do you see the change being shift and how fast you think it'll be done?
I mean, I think we're starting to see it now. Like, the past 10 years has been really generous when it comes to representation. You know, obviously nothing will always check all the boxes. I won't always get what I want. Things will not always happen as fast as I would like them to. But, you know, the fact that I can go on to Hulu and that there are, you know, Indigenous programs or Indigenous horror films on there is like a massive step. And, you know, whatever is a win to me, whether it be small or big. And I've been seeing a lot of like big wins, you know. You look at shows like Reservation Dogs, like just killing it. They're going to get on their third season. You know, they implement horror stuff in their in their episodes as well. And it's a beautifully well-written series. you know, just getting so many accolades and so much needed spotlight. And then you have films like Prey. The fact that like a female Indigenous protagonist is now part of this franchise, this massive franchise, is like a huge thing. And, you know, maybe like what I'm doing is just like, you know, like little chicken scratches. But if that's like enough to plant a seed for another person that comes after me, I did my work. That's all that matters to me, is that, you know, that we're all just doing as much work as we can now to make sure that future generations are able to create more and more opportunities, more and more work. So, I mean, I see it now. I feel very hopeful. I feel very good. I mean, there's other things I don't feel very hopeful about. But when it comes to media and when it comes to art, I've just been seeing such a resurgence of Latin and of Indigenous, you know, people all throughout the spectrum. Like, I fucking love it. I think it's beautiful and I think it's great and I'm excited.
I think the other exciting part, too, is that I don't know if you know, if you've seen this in the news, Kendall, but a lot of museums are now paying their dues for stolen work.
Yeah, I've heard something about that. I'm excited to see how, where that go.
I've been seeing
Killmonger will be proud.
Yeah, like kill him. Yeah, and I've been seeing that a lot. Like going back to again the shift. I do get what you mean with the wins, whether it's small or big, and then to see that of like, oh, you know, that I think it started off with Mexico saying they were suing a museum for all the stolen Aztec artifacts. Artifacts that this museum has stolen, and they won that, and they're like, we're getting that back. And then I saw it in other countries too, where they're like, you stole our work, we're getting it back, you're still from our culture. And I love that that's happening. That's also like a big thing too, where it's just like accountability, you know, you stole our work to try to put it in display of like, oh, look at this, look at that, look at that. And then you have someone named freaking like, I don't know, Sarah Graham, pasty white girl, talking about the culture when you're not even part of the culture, you just studied it, talking about it. And then now it's just like we're getting accountability for that now. We're getting what was stolen from us back. And I feel that's also part of the chain reaction of changes.
Yeah, there's a lot of fields that are in a sense, like, you know, being unsettled, decolonized, they're changing, they're shifting. Repatriation is a very messy and loaded topic that I did teach about last quarter. And, you know, there are really great examples of what's going on. And there's also some really poor examples of like how people handle accountability. And, you know, it's also, there's such a messiness where it's like, well, now that we're returning it, like how are these objects now going? Like, how are they going to be displayed? Like, how does the story change now that they're back home?
Yeah.
So like there's like a lot of like repair when it comes to narrative as well. And, you know, I think it's like the British Museum now has like these sort of like vitrines where they have signage that says like object like no longer here, or like object like, you know, in the process of being returned, because like they're also having to deal with their own accountability. You know, a lot of museums throughout the world. I mean, I was recently in Mexico City and I saw Montezuma's headdress, but it was a recreation of it because the original is in Austria and has been and has been there for quite some time because it was considered a gift. And I'm like, I don't know if you can, can't really take something that was never yours and say it's a gift. Like, you know, there's a lot of complications. So, you know, there's a lot of changes and shifts happening when it comes to accountability in a lot of industries, some slower, some faster than others. But I, again, as I said before, I'm very positive. You know, it makes me really excited when I'm like, ooh, some Ben and bronzes were returned home. Like, you know, like that feels that feels like a, you know, like those small wins that end up being these big ripples for the culture. So,
yeah, that's really interesting. I wonder what the, you know, the end result of some of those cases will be. And I wonder how we'll kind of, you know, because, you know, a lot of these things happen and people are trying to prevent them from happening again. I kind of wonder how people will in the future prevent things like this from happening, if, you know, if done so. I just think about the many ways that like culture can be taken, you know, like whether it's artifacts, whether it's how history, I just been thinking about language as a whole, especially since, you know, we live in a capitalist society and like culture is a commodity in a lot of ways, at least treated as something that can be profited off of. And, you know, there's terms that people come up with, slang terms that end up being so popular that brands adopt them. And it's like, how do you make sure the person who, you know, created the term gets some sort of like compensation for being the creator? Like, what do we lose track of the creator? I know we don't value art, but like, we should. Art, language is art.
Oh, yeah. That the whole like appropriation, reappropriation conversation is also very loaded and like very nuanced, where it's kind of like a lot of the things that we do think we have ownership for, we find out end up being these sort of like interwoven cultural exchanges. And you're kind of like, yeah. Ooh, do we actually own this? And it just becomes, and you know, that's the thing with, you know, globalization, with colonization, it makes things so fucking muddied. And then you have all these subcultures where it's like, well, who really invented this? And it's like, well, at a certain point, like, can't we just enjoy it? Because now the community can enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because I find that sometimes when we hold on to things for so long, we're gatekeeping, we're creating these binaries, and that we're not allowing other people to understand who we are as people. So I've become like less gatekeepy about certain things, because it's like, ultimately, like, I want you to come into my space and respect me and understand, like, you know, why things are important. You know, I don't want to put things behind glass or behind a wall, because that's what's happened for so long. And because of that, things have been misinterpreted for so long.
Guess what I'm just trying to say, Marisa? I just want to make some money. If I come up with something, I can make some money.
Oh, you know what? If you want to make some coin, I will completely support that. I completely support you making money. I don't want to keep anyone from making much needed money.
No, I appreciate the thoughtfulness of the answer, though.
Anyway. besides being an educator and a graduate now, right? Because you're done. Oh, you're just like,
Yeah.
Oh, not yet?
No, I am. I haven't done for a minute.
But on top of that, you know, you're an artist, you're a daughter, you're a granddaughter, you're a crafter, you make, you know, earrings, jewelry, you bake stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you juggle all of that?
Well, I don't know how well I do juggle it, but I try. I've become so glued to the idea of a planner and making sure that, like, I can make the most of the time that I do have, but I also make time for rest. So that's something that I've been trying to embrace since COVID, is how do I balance work and rest? And It's so hard for me, because I've been so conditioned. And I don't know if like this is something that you've experienced, but like, you know, I had a very tough like Mexican grandmother that would like drilled into me that if I wasn't working, like, I wasn't useful. And I'm having to uncondition myself from that work mentality, because it's so hard.
Yeah, I know that vibe.
I get what you mean.
Yeah, like, I had like a really tough like Latina grandmother who would, you know, we were constantly always working, and I'm having to teach myself that, you know, even as an artist, even as an educator, I have to treat it sometimes like a 9-to-5, even if I'm like really passionate about something, because I don't want to burn the candle at both ends. But yeah, like, you know, I also don't do stuff I don't want to do. So if I'm more into beading during a period of time, I'm going to focus on that. If I'm more into baking, which is also part of my art making process, I'll focus on that. Right now I'm leaning more into baking because I have an amazing new kitchen behind me. But I'm also like, I opened my closet today and I saw all my beads and I was like, because you just feel so called to do stuff like that, you know. And also I find that my artistic practice is also kind of like medicine. It's medicine work, you know. It heals me, and I hope that the pieces that I make bring some sort of healing or curiosity from people who are around it.
But yeah, I totally get what you mean with the whole like generational trauma. Gotta love it. Because yeah, that is what the culture teaches you. We don't have time to slack. When you're just resting, you're doing nothing, and then you feel like crap because you're doing nothing. And it took me a long time as well to finally like accept, and, you know, of course, help with therapy, of like, doing nothing is you're doing something. Even if you're not like actively doing work, you're doing something because you're resting. And it it takes time to break that mentality. It really does, because you're just like, oh no, I'm being lazy, I'm being this, you know, like, what am I tired about? You know, I used to always hear that when I'd be like, oh, you know, I'm tired from my long day. What are you tired of? You have no reason to be tired. You guys always be told that. And so, yeah, it's heavy. Generational trauma, man.
I have a fantastic work ethic, but I also want to be like, you know what I also excel at? Resting.
Like, I hate you on that.
Yeah. And you know, I like yesterday, like I have a long commute to my teaching position. And so when I got back, I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to do all these things. And I was like, fuck no, I'm going to make myself a smiley face pizza. And then I'm going to go to bed. You know, like I didn't want to do more than what I had told myself in my car ride home. So yeah, definitely finding time to rest and like balance things out. It's hard and it's difficult, but it's like what also just keeps me going. And also I don't deplete myself.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah, it's hard not to, but I understand exactly what you mean. I'm a big fan of doing not a goddamn thing. So I understand.
Have to take care of yourself, especially nowadays. You know, you have to, the society that we're in, we all need to definitely have those moments where we have boundaries and take care of ourselves.
And it's just like, again, like, this is also why I love horror, you know? Like, that too I've been seeing on the screen of, you know, generational shit being broken in a very metaphorical way, like, you know, films like, even Disney films, like, you know, Encanto, that movie broke all of us. That movie broke all of us.
Turning Red is what got me. I cried on the plane like a baby on my way to Montreal. I like watched that and I was like, it's like all of our moms.
I know that too. And also even in horror, like The Night House, that was such a great movie about, I mean, spoilers for those who haven't watched it, but a great movie about mental health and depression. What does it feel like? What does it look like? You know, like fighting that whole, like, I guess, inner demon of like, do I live? Do I die? Do I live? Do I? And it's just so beautifully done. You know, even, you know, Smile tried to do it as well with the whole mental health thing. And it's crazy how now we're seeing more of that, even in the Guatemalan film La Llorona, which is still one of my favorite films ever. Because that too is just like, oh my god, you know, to fuse a folklore with generational stuff with an actual genocide that happened. And then, oh, so beautifully done. I watched that movie so, like, it's my favorite. I always recommend people to watch it. They're like, what's a good horror film? La Llorona, Guatemalan.
Yeah.
Watch that one.
Not the American one.
Yeah, not the whitewashed one. It's garbage. It's caca.
Yes, damn, that movie was so bad. The American. I wanted to like that movie, but it was so bad.
I was like, what in the caucasity is going on here?
But I was like, absolutely not.
Yes. But like that too, you know, and I like the fact that we're seeing that more in horror as well, where again, like, and I get so annoying people who are, you could tell, who are not avid horror fans who watch those films and are just like, oh, that wasn't really scary. I don't get what they were talking about. It was just not scary at all. And, you know, again, we always have these conversations where it's just like, just because a movie didn't scare you, because you have this whole perception of what you think horror is, doesn't mean it scared someone else who's going through that, who's witnessed that, who's experienced that, or who still is experienced that. You know, like, it's, horror is everything. You know, horror is very unlimited. Even things that you would never think was horror is a subgenre of horror. And you know, Armin hates when I have this conversation with him about like the subgenres of horror, but it's true. You know, everything is horror, even things you don't think it is. And I remember you and I had that conversation too, Marissa, where you were like, even films that are just drama, but they talk about horrific things, that's considered horror. It may not be labeled horror, but it's horror.
Yeah, a lot of people will get annoyed when I will label certain things horror. And I'm like, why? Like, there's nothing more terrifying than losing your mind, losing the world around you. Like, that's like real horror. Like, you know, like having the world that you are so accommodated to pulled from underneath you. So, yeah, I find that horror is extremely nuanced. And the closer that it is to our own reality, the scarier.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I think most people just don't want to realize there are a lot more terrifying things in life than they've already considered. I think that's a big part of it. Between that and, you know, of course, the conception of how horror was always viewed for a very long time. It wasn't viewed as like a quality genre versus a lot of the other genres. Like, no one would put like any horror movie against something like The Departed or something, like something where people go, that's a cinematic genius. And it's like, yes, that movie is great. But there are other movies that also can tell that story in a different way in the horror genre. Like this, you don't have to cut up the genre just to up something you like already. It's really, and I think just, you know, people realize that now. I think we're getting there. People slowly realizing now, people coming in more because there's so much, like, horror's getting so much more accessible over time, you know. Between now you have, like, the Megans of the world, where it's, like, basically a movie borderline making fun of white culture. Like, you have, you know, the bridge is expanding. So people are getting there. People are getting there slowly, but they're getting there.
Okay, that is, like, one genre of horror that I just do not gel with. Artificial intelligence terrifies me. Like, oh, any film, any film that has like had a focus with artificial intelligence or like, you know, computer technology having like this advanced like sentience is like terrifying mm-hmm. to me. AI as a child, Haley Joel Osment gave me nightmares.
Oh my that god,
that film terrified me. Yeah, so like any films that are like Megan, like. That I think, you know, give me a bloodbath, give me blood just, you know, all over me, you know, any day. But a like robot girl, hell no, I'm walking the other way. Like, I'm not dealing with that.
Oh, so I'm guessing Ex Machina wasn't for you either.
Oh my god, Ex Machina. Oh my god, that film. I walked when I was done with that film. I had to go for a very long walk. Because I just was
we're gonna
like,
have to do that one at some point.
I was like, the betrayal, you know, like it just and yeah, and the creepy dance scene and like just the way people,
yep.
like it's just no, thank you.
Oh my god!
Yeah, you found my kryptonite. Yeah, you found my kryptonite.
Listen.
Now I know for the future. We're going to bring you on when we do that one specifically.
Hell no. Absolutely not. I'm not in town. I'm not available.
This is what Kendall does. He sees your biggest fear and he's just like, all right, let's do that one. That's yeah. 10. Now you've experienced the full Kendall effect.
Want to give me nightmares? Mail me a Furby for my birthday. That will terrify me.
Oh, well, those damn things are scary for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, oh my God. I think like that and like Child's Play were definitely like films that that's like one of the films I couldn't get in. Like the Chucky franchise is just like, I'm good. I'm good without objects getting sentience. I'm great.
Chucky is a little bit different, though, because remember, Chucky's supposed to be like a serial killer who put his soul in the doll.
Yeah, but still, like, the reanimated object, like, still very close to, like, robots. Like, nope. Mm-hmm. Nope. Absolutely not.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's funny because, like, you say your fear of AI, and I'm just, like, saying, ever since Terminator... I've been preparing myself for when the rise of machines happen in real life, and I'm like, I'm ready. I watched the movie for this. I know what to do. I'm ready for the resistance. I am ready.
Wow. Yeah, I'm a very analog person. Like, I don't have a lot of, like, I have a TV now, and I haven't had a TV in years. So even that feels very weird to me. You know, I just have a laptop and a cell phone. That's as much technology as I'm going to commit to.
You know, that explains a lot, because every time you hop on Discord you're just like, so guys, this is a lot. I haven't done this in forever. I don't even use these things. What is it? I'm like, oh, okay, I guess she's like serious. She really doesn't use any of these things.
I really don't.
I mean, in a way, it's good though.
I know, but I like I'm also at that place where a lot of this technology is like used like in the university system. So like a lot of my students will be like, oh, are you like on this thing? And I was like, I don't know what that is. What are you saying to me, child? Like, you know, like there's certain things that are said to me. Like I just recently went on TikTok for the first time just to like look at things and was like, this is so weird to me. Like, and I'm in my early 30s, but like, yeah, I just, certain things like that just really overwhelm me. So I can't. I'm good with the having less ghosts and machines. You know, less technology, the better. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, as someone whose whole class is all of TikTok kids, I agree with you. I agree with you. All my kids are TikTok kids, and I'm just like constantly like, get off your TikTok. Like, but we're not I don't care. Give me a phone. Give me your phone. I don't want to see it.
He's like, hey, why are you popping and locking in class? She's like, I saw it on TikTok. And I can't stop.
I mean, I feel like there are certain things that I am missing out on, but I'm kind of like, I'll learn about that like in 3 months on Instagram or on YouTube. You know, it'll come around my circle sometime. It might be a little.
It will
late.
Come around for sure.
Yeah,
that is true. I saw a post like that on Instagram. Where it's just like you're the person who you're the type of person who watches TikToks on Instagram 3 months later after it's on TikTok, and I'm like, yeah, that's me. I'm that person. That's me. I watch TikTok videos on Instagram.
It is what it is.
It's way easier that way. But before we hop up out of here, what's next? What's next for you, Marisa? What should people be looking forward to? What are you getting into? Anything you want to tell us?
What am I getting into? Oh, well, I was recently published in a writing periodical called Cake Theme.
Whoop.
And the theme is basically like wicked cakes, so anything horror related that has to do with confection, cakes, desserts, all of that, whether that be like histories of recipes that are pretty messed up or, you know, devilish, you know, concoctions that people with. I wrote about a piece of mine that talks about land grabbing and the Indian burial ground trope. So if you're into reading things that are about food and super fun, check that out. Lately, I am just like focusing on making pieces. You know, I am a practicing artist. I'm also teaching. So I'm teaching a textile seminar and hopefully in the future teaching more classes on horror and art at universities because I'm super passionate.
Nice.
Awesome.
Nice. So for our lovely audience listening, where can they find you and where can they read the piece that was published?
Well, Cake Zine, you'll have to check that out online. And then as for me, I am only on Instagram because everything else scares me and terrifies me. And you can just find me at Marisa, M-A-R-I-S-A, and my last name, De La Peña, D-E-L-A-P-E-N-A. And that's mostly where I keep people updated on my work. I will also just shitpost dumb stuff. So if you're into that, that's also great. Hopefully going to have some more writing about horror out soon. So if you're into reading academic horror writing, I'm your gal Friday. But other than that, that's it.
Awesome. Thank you for coming by. We always appreciate talking to you. We really do.
Oh, it's always an honor.
But me, right? Talk about me, right?
Yes.
See, she said it. Let me stop before Kendall tries to replace me. Let me stop.
If I do, it's going to be with a robot of Jackie. I want to fill in with all your catchphrases and everything you said. I'm like, okay, AI, be Jackie.
Oh, then Marissa's never going to come back. Damn, you paid yourself.
No, I won't. I will not come back.
I believe you.
All right. Well, yes, thank you for coming and thank you for those listening. And until next time, ooh, you ghost goodbye.